Hey, hey, friends, if you've ever had any interest in doing public speaking as a part of your business or even as a revenue stream, you have got to stay tuned for today's episode. Today, I'm talking to Lauren Sergi of Upfront Communications, and she is obsessed with communication, public speaking, the craft of persuasion, and the nuance of interpersonal communication. We go down a little bit of a rabbit hole about becoming a professional slash paid speaker, but it is absolutely worth the listen. So without further ado, let's dive in with Lauren Sergi. You're listening to Steady She Grows, where we talk open and honest about what it's really like to start a business. Being a business owner is full of challenges and growth. Each week, I interview other business owners about what it took for them to get started and to really take off in their businesses. I'm your host, Casey Jordan of Boss Lady Central, and let's get to today's episode. All right, welcome Lauren Sergi from Upfront Communications to the show today. Lauren, thank you so much for joining me.
Delighted to be here, Casey. Thank you for setting all this up. I know it's a ton of work.
Yeah, it turns out it is.
If everything we do in business is a ton of work.
Yeah.
There's no getting away from that.
No, there's always so much more behind it than I ever think on everything. Yes.
So for all of you out there who are like, when will the work end?
It doesn't.
Why am I so tired? It's because this is a hell of a lot of work.
Right. Yeah. It just changes into different work. When this gets easy, there'll be the new thing that's going to be hard. Yep. Exactly. So Lauren, tell us a bit about what you do now, and then we're going to dive back into where you started. What are you doing now? A bit about you.
For sure. I am a public speaking and communication wonk. Everything about my business is public speaking and communication. So I consult, I train, I coach. I am a professional speaker as well as an author on the topic. My book, The Handy Communication Answer Book, came out in 2017. It's a monster, 400 pages. Because if you're going to write a book, make your first one a giant 400-page reference book.
Wow.
But I address pretty much everything related to public speaking and face-to-face communication. But my central focus is on professionals who work within larger organizations, especially those at the senior leadership level. And I've got clients in Canada, my home country, as well as the US and in Europe. So it's grown.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay. Spectacular. So where did that start? Was this your first business? Like, what was the first step into entrepreneurship way back when?
Way back when. This is my first full-on business. You know, I had side hustles.
Right.
Throughout university and after university, I always had the side hustles. But this was the first thing that I decided to take on as a business. And it started because I had to do a lot of staff training in my former life as a librarian. And if you're thinking, what? You were a librarian? Yeah. Yeah, that's the response I get from a lot of people. It wasn't exactly a match made in heaven.
Hey, we all.
Oh, man. Well, I'd go into libraries. I never worked with the public. I always worked with staff. And I would go in and train staff on how to use databases. Which is as interesting as it sounds.
Yeah.
But the staff usually did not want to learn these new databases. They don't want one more thing on their plate. They hated them as much as the public did. And I'd have to make them interesting and exciting. So I would go in and do that. And after a while, library conference organizers and library managers started saying, hey, can you come back and teach us how to present the same way that you do? And that kind of set a bell off in my head because I had a background in acting, in radio work, in dance performance, but also this really strong background in academics and history and classics and rhetoric. And I had married all of that together and systematized it in terms of how I approached public speaking and presentations. Right. So when people asked me that, I thought, yeah, for sure I can teach this.
Right.
It's like learning how to write an essay. It's like learning how to ride a bike. You can learn this. And it occurred to me that if the librarians are asking about this, then there's probably other people who want it too. So I thought, well, why not put out an ad? So I put an ad in Kijiji, our version of Craigslist,
as
a public speaking coach, saying, hey, do you have to give presentations at work? Do you want to get better at them? Contact me. And it was a little freebie ad. That was it. And I had my first client within 2 weeks.
Wow. And when was this? Bang. How long ago was this?
That was around 2011.
Okay.
So it was several years ago. And at first it was just, you know what, this is something cool that I can do on the side. Right. I had an idea that I was going to end up in library management. Yeah, that didn't happen. And it just grew. So I got my first client, you know, 2 weeks after posting the ad. And then a few weeks later, I got another client. And it wasn't like it was an avalanche of people coming in. It was this steady drip.
Mm-hmm.
And they would tell other people and the network would start.
Right.
And the referrals would go out. And that was how the business started. That was how it grew. That's to a large degree how it is still growing today.
That's awesome.
And it's been growing ever since. So I, you know, throughout all those years, I kept my day job. They were tolerant and flexible. Two things for which I am eternally grateful for. Right. And as of last year, I made the leap to this business being full-time because at that point, my income stream in the business had reached parity with my full-time job. And that was when I always said, this will be the cutoff. I could no longer keep doing both. I was burning myself out. So it was okay. Time to make the jump and the stars aligned with work. And there we go. Here it is.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, end of the show.
There you go.
There you go.
Extremely tolerant employer who will let you build this stuff.
And the stars align and the stars align and you can transition. Right.
But it was a lot of steady work throughout the whole thing. What I did was I spent many years building up my platform, mm-hmm. not necessarily my email list. You know, how many people are on your list? That's something that is still a work in progress. But the platform being the content that I was creating, the presentations mm-hmm. I was creating, the number of times I would go out there and get my message out to people who would listen.
Mm-hmm.
All of that was built slowly through the years.
Right. So early on, did you do a lot of face-to-face? Was it a lot of in-person, like coaching and development starting out? Or did you dive into the online thing from the beginning?
Initially, it was all face-to-face.
Okay.
I had no idea how I was going to do the online thing. Zoom was not a thing yet. And
right.
Skype sucks.
Yep.
In terms of, I always knew that distance was a possibility, and I do a great deal of distance coaching now as well as webinars. But at the time, the connections just weren't that great, so I wasn't too comfortable with it. And I had enough work coming in locally that I could stick with that.
Right.
As time progressed, I did pilot an online course a couple of years ago, and I'm ramping that up to do a new iteration of it. But it was building up the in-person face-to-face core content that really, that's the foundation of my business.
Right.
And now technology has gotten so good, so easy, so accessible and cheap that taking it online is a natural extension.
Right. At that point, it wasn't a decision. It was just an obvious next step.
Obvious next step.
Nice. So are you mostly working online now or do you still have a lot of face-to-face work?
My one-on-one work is, I would say, about 70% online, 30% face-to-face.
Okay.
I'm choosy in the number of one-on-one clients I take on each year, just as a sanity aspect of the business. I can only serve so many people at once, but the online certainly makes that much easier. And as I said, now that more of the core content has been developed, I'm moving back into that online space, and it's a big experiment. It's a big experiment. Much more of my video content, like much more of my speaking content, I would say is now in an online format through video content development. I'm a speaker. It makes sense that the majority of the way people access my information is by seeing me do it.
Right.
So that's just providing proof that I can do what I claim I do. So in that sense, it has gone much more online.
Right. No, that makes logical. Yeah, it's a logical progression as like, so much stuff moves online and then for you to be able to show what you do. And once the content's created, then like, why not keep using it? Like,
exactly.
So if you're going to make the video to show one client, like, hey, here's how you can do this thing, then you might as well make the video and show it to everybody.
Precisely.
Makes sense. All right. Is there anywhere along the process, and maybe more so since you left your full-time job, that you ever thought about quitting the entrepreneurship thing and just going back and shooting for library management?
No.
Good.
Actually, I had more, should I do this? Should I quit? Is it, it's getting too hard. When I was still working full-time, now that I'm, you know, as opposed to now that I'm full-time on my business. And I think that's because at that point, there was that siren call of like, you'll get a pension and stability as much as that exists in today's world. These things are here and you're still in it.
Right. But
now that I can focus solely on the business that I'm doing, everything has balanced out much better. Mm-hmm. My business activities are now far more ramped up than they were before, even though I was putting in at least 25 hours a week on my business while I was still working full time. So I have fewer doubts in my mind now than I did when I was working. That being said, having held on to my full-time job for as long as I did was what allowed me to build my business and my content in the way I wanted it, mm-hmm. which is huge. I didn't have to worry about chasing clients. I didn't have to take up every free or low-paid crappy speaking gig out there because I needed to pay the bills at the end of the month. So it was hugely liberating in that sense. And for that reason, I don't recommend, like, for me, I know everyone's different, but with my personality, I'm actually very cautious. Mm-hmm. So I don't follow the whole notion that you need to burn the bridges and get rid of the old things that are holding you back, because they might actually be supporting you. And in my case, they supported me. But now that I'm not in that world anymore, I have no desire to return to it.
Yeah. No, I think that makes sense.
My librarians.
Right. But they can stay there. Yeah. No, I think that's a great perspective, because there is kind of this push now of like, just dive in. Like, once you know what you want to do, go for it. And like you said, whether you're cautious, whether you have like family or financial responsibilities, like you got to pay the bills first. Like there's another coach I work with, and she's like, are you struggling to pay the bills? Then go get a job and like, work, maybe the work becomes the side hustle while you focus on the business, but like go get a part-time job bagging groceries if that would take the stress off so that you can build the business without, because I think that chaos like seeps into our clients too. Like if you were frantic to get them hired, like taking those crap jobs that nobody wants that are way undercharged, like they feel that off you. Like that
doesn't, oh yeah.
Yeah, that's not going to do you any good. So
we can smell desperation a mile away.
Yep, exactly, exactly. So do you think there was ever a point where you were undercharging?
Oh, God, yes. Oh, heavens, yes. Okay. Definitely at first.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think that that was a mistake, because what undercharging at that point taught me was that I could generate this money. Mm-hmm. And that was incredibly exciting. Like my first client was $30 an hour. Okay. And I thought, oh my God, I can't believe I'm charging 30 an hour for this. I was like, good. Let me clutch my pearls. I'm so daring.
Right.
Then my next client said, you know, I talked to another coach and this is what she's charging. I'm like, holy crap.
Right. Okay. Wait, what?
But I still didn't feel like I was at that person's level yet, but it taught me that I could ramp it up. Mm-hmm. And that early moment of charging just a little, but getting people coming in and kind of proving that this is something that people wanted and would pay for was hugely empowering. I had never earned money selling something on my own before. Mm-hmm. It was always, you know, it was always jobs on the side or things where someone else had set the fee. And then I'd come in and say, yeah, I can do it for that much. When I set the fee and I brought in the work, wow, that was a complete mind shift.
Right.
Total mind shift for me.
So for you, was that then empowering to continue to raise your prices, or did you have to go through some money mindset stuff in order to kind of like wrap your head around like, oh, I can charge that per hour?
I really had to go through a bit of money mindset shifting, especially in relation to the one-on-one client work. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I'm a cheapskate. I always think, well, what would I pay for this? Oh, no one will pay. I wouldn't pay that. So why would someone pay me that? And the interesting thing is that as I tested the waters, As I charged more and saw less resistance to my fees, the higher I went, I also became willing myself to pay more for the sort of help that I would seek out, because I began to see and appreciate the difference in quality that was there. And the difference in quality can be huge. I'm not saying that someone who isn't charging a lot is not worth it or they're not giving good quality work, but I began to look for people who genuinely valued themselves. Mm-hmm. Now, to a degree, you also have to be able to sniff out when the overvaluation is happening. It happens a lot, especially in the online space. Mm-hmm. You'll see people put together these packages and they say, like, you know, 9 bonuses worth $15,000 and I'm going to only charge you like $789. Uh-huh. Like, there's a discrepancy there. I think you're pulling these numbers out of your ass.
Yeah, I always...
yeah, like...
That's one that always kills me. Like, is there like... free Facebook or, you know, Facebook group valued at $2,000. I'm like, really? Really? Like, I get what you're shooting for, yeah. But can you really put a number on that?
Yeah. So you don't want to be pulling the numbers out of your ass. And, right. And whenever I raised my prices, the way that I kind of wrap my head around that is that I would look at what competitors who were offering similar stuff charged. Mm-hmm. And in my space, it was, so what are the universities charging for their group classes at this level? Can I charge that? Why, yes, people will pay that. Okay, cool. That allowed me to charge a lot more than I necessarily would have, because I was thinking, oh, well, you know, I'm not some big institution. I'm just little old me.
Right.
And then I said, no, if people are willing to pay that big institution and there's no proof online that their prof, that their instructor knows this content the way that I do, then I've already proven that I know this content. I should be charging at least that. So it gave me a platform to jump off of. Mm-hmm. And then I started looking at what other consultants who had my caliber of content, what they were charging. And I started to follow suit. Mm-hmm. And then figuring out, okay, this is exactly what people are paying for when they get me. And it helped me feel a lot more comfortable. The other mindset shift with my fees, especially my workshop and speaker fees, you know, for everyone who's listening who has ever thought in dabbling in public speaking as an income revenue, as an income stream, it's really tough. It's like getting going in acting. So I will be very blunt about that.
Yeah, no, that's a good heads up.
It's not worth it.
Yeah.
And for different, depending on what your business model is, it might be a critical marketing step for you to take to get in front of crowds, to give the speeches, get your message out that way. But when I was figuring out, okay, if I'm going to call myself a keynoter, and I was doing small keynotes at the time, what do I need to charge? And one of my colleagues in my speaker association said that their experience was that unless you started charging between $1,500 and $3,000 for the talk, people are going to assume you're an amateur. Said it's that 3,000 mark that at that price point, people who hire speakers say this is a pro and actually take you seriously. Right. So undervaluing and undercharging for your services might indicate that you are an amateur, that you're not the pro they're looking for, which doesn't allow you to compete at all. You have to figure out what you're communicating in terms of the price points that you're setting and go along with that line of charge, even if it feels uncomfortable, even if it feels like it's too much.
That's super interesting. Especially like the speaking realm is so different. Like mm-hmm. that there is like, there's always that question when you look at consultants or a course or, and you look at the price and you're like, well, that seems low. Am I going to get a good value for it? But when it becomes like a literal make or break, like, are you a professional or not? Like that's a yep. whole different thing to wrap your head around when it comes to picking a price.
Yeah. And the caveat with that is that if you are going to charge pro rates, you at best deliver pro quality.
Right.
So, and yeah. And I say that because if, again, from the speaker world point of view, if someone comes in and they say, well, I've done a few freebie talks at Rotary, which is a great way to get started. It's how I built my portfolio. Mm-hmm. I've done a few freebie talks at Rotary, so now I'm going to come in and charge $3,000 or charge $5,000. And their speech is not up to scratch because they haven't done that kind of really difficult, intensive work of getting it to that level. Then they're going to damage their brand. Because word gets around.
That was going to be kind of my next question. Like, I imagine if you charge $3,000 and then give a half-assed speech, like, you're never going to get booked again.
You won't get booked again.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that's what I'm realizing. Like,
yeah.
Like a lot of people, I want to dabble in speaking. I do. I've done a TEDx talk and I've done a couple of big keynotes and it's like, but it's one of those ones where like, still there's that kind of next level above. I'm still at the free level and it's like, oh, like right. I definitely have, like, when you said that 3,000 mark, I'm like, oh, like I've got some mindset work to do myself. Like that's an interesting, and it's such a different world than some of the regular coaching and consulting that you see so much of. Cause it is super competitive. I don't know if I've met an entrepreneur that doesn't want to either be a speaker or write a book or both.
Yeah. It's something we all want to do, right? Yes. It's a credibility yes. marker.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, I think that then it's this deciding like what level of a speaker, like, do you want to stick around, do local women's conferences, or do you want to be a professional paid, this is part of what you do for a living kind of speaker. And there's not a right or wrong to either of them, but
there really isn't a right or wrong to it. It's a matter of, it's like picking any kind of revenue stream within your business. So, you know, I know that we're focusing a little bit on the speaking side of things here, but it is such an interesting business stream.
Yes.
That if someone was to say, well, I want to be a speaker, my initial response is, what do you speak about?
Yeah.
And it's not the fact that they're a speaker that matters.
Right.
It's the fact that they're an expert on a topic and they choose to share that message through speaking. That's an avenue.
Right.
You know, if someone said, I want to be an author. Okay. What do you write? I don't know. I just want to write.
Oh, we got to narrow it down more. Right. Exactly.
You're not going to build a business around that. Right.
Right.
Same thing with speaking.
Right.
So if the revenue model, if it fits your business as a reasonable revenue model, you enjoy doing it. You have some experience in it. You can build it out and you're comfortable with charging, then cool. Mm-hmm. Turn it into a revenue stream.
Right.
But even for people who aren't necessarily there yet, they might not necessarily want to be a pro speaker. To me, it's still a critical aspect of just about any business, because that in-person spoken word sharing of a message is so, so, so powerful. By putting yourself in front of a group of people, you immediately assume a role of expertise, and people in the audience are saying, they're the ones speaking, they must be an expert.
Yes. So, yep. Exactly. I know, like, for me, I know I have found a lot of like, I don't know, internal validation by being the one on stage,
mm-hmm.
you know, is like you were saying, like, oh, they think I'm the expert. And in the back of my mind, I'm going, oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, but then afterwards, you know, like, oh, I learned so much. And I'm like, oh, I do know what I'm doing. Like, it's really helped like boost my confidence in my work. And then like, even at like a non-speaker level, to like walk into a conference as like an attendee, or I do a lot of like little local women's get togethers, like to walk in and just be able to introduce myself is now easier because I'm not scared of talking in front of 20 people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such an important aspect of business, and whether or not you're keen on getting in front of people live, or you want to do it a little more hands-off and do something like create video content,
right?
You still have to get that message out there in some way, shape, or form.
Yep.
If it makes sense to monetize the speaking avenue as part of your business model, as part of the overall package of what you offer, great, do it. Go ahead and do it. Just make sure that you put in as much effort to polishing that speaking side of things as you would to polishing any other sort of revenue stream or thing that you offer.
Right.
Because it needs to be as polished as that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. Because we were just talking about that before the call started, of that, like, I was going to do YouTube, but it wasn't the right fit for me. So I went into the podcast, like, you know, maybe I'll decide speaking's not right for me and I'll go back to writing. Like, there's, yeah, you have to find what avenues you're comfortable with. Because I personally be curious your thoughts on this. I personally think in business anymore, because online has become so easy and so cheap, I don't think blog versus podcast versus YouTube or like speaker versus author inherently is better platform than another. Like it used to be you had to have a blog to be a real business. And now it's like you can skip the blog and just have a podcast. Like, do you think there's some truth to that?
Absolutely. As long as you are getting your message out there in the way that your audience is likely to consume it, mm-hmm. then it doesn't matter what avenue you pick. Pick something that you like,
right?
But make sure that it is an avenue that your audience is actually going to access.
Right.
So the tricky thing with just speaking, let's say, is that you can only reach a certain number of people at a time, unless you record those speeches and put them online. Mm-hmm. So if you want to say, I want to speak, but I want my message to reach lots of people, then maybe vlogging or doing video or podcasting is the better avenue because it can simply be distributed much better. If you're more comfortable in the written word, then set up a traditional blog and cross post it to LinkedIn or wherever it is your audience is hanging out. Right. It's a matter of knowing how your audience is going to best receive your message.
Yes.
So finding that congruence there.
Yes.
And then doing it.
Right. And I think that's the two magic points there is where are they going to receive the message best from you and then doing it. Is that like, yeah, it's everybody's everywhere. So like, how are they going to hear me best? How am I most confident in presenting myself?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's not that it's not going to be scary.
No,
it will always be scary. My view on professional speakers is that we are extremely good at hiding a series of panic attacks on the stage and then using that adrenaline to our advantage.
There's
still nerves involved. There's still a ton of practice involved.
Yeah.
I get anxious every time I turn on the camera.
Right.
Me staring into a dark hole of a camera without an audience mm-hmm. to bounce off of is like, oh God. I crawl inside my own head and then it's like, you're not doing this right.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to do it. You figure out the ways to push past that.
Yes.
And the big thing is that you keep moving forwards with it. You say, yeah, that felt icky. Maybe it wasn't my best, but I'm still going to put it out there.
Yeah.
It's Seth Godin's thing. You ship.
Yes.
You ship the work.
Exactly.
If it's not finished, I don't care. You ship it.
Yep.
The speech isn't perfect. It's never going to be perfect. Work on getting it as best as you can. But when those curtains go up, it's showtime. You do it. You hit record on the video camera. You release the podcast.
Yep.
You ship.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that good transition. How has your business evolved as you have gotten comfortable in your avenues, as you've gotten new avenues and branched out? Like, what are some big ways, maybe what you're offering has evolved?
It definitely has. I'm still offering pretty much everything that I started offering. So I started with the one-on-one. It was accessible. It was easy. I said, this is something that I can test really, really quickly. At that point, I also started taking that and saying, okay, is this something that I can do with larger groups? So I tested the talks at library conferences. Instead of doing databases, I'm going to do presentations on how to give presentations. Let's see how many people show up. Mm-hmm. Oh, everyone showed up. No one went to that open bar that was scheduled at the same time as my talk. This is interesting.
Uh-huh.
So that validated the idea of doing this on the conference circuit, which made a lot of sense to me. The next big step, because I wasn't ready to start charging for my talks then. I didn't feel like I had enough of a portfolio. Mm-hmm. So the next step after that, which is something that one of my business coaches had me do, was to launch a group class. If I can teach this to one person at a time, surely I can teach this to 8 people at a time.
Right.
And that was back, I think I launched my first group class in about 2014, and it has been a steady income stream in my portfolio since then. Will it always be there? No. I can tell you right now that as the business is growing, especially on the trajectory that it currently is, I won't be able to offer these classes. So then it will move online.
Okay.
There's still that continuity. So it was very slow. You know, year one was the coaching, year two was the coaching plus the group classes. Mm-hmm. Then it got into the paid speaking. And I said, I'm ready to get paid for the speaking. I'm done doing the freebie circuit. I've built my portfolio. Let's add this. Where the evolution happened and I started to prune things was who I offered the services to. So at first, it was anyone. Sure, I'll teach students. Sure, I'll do a class for youth. I'll do the 4-H club. I will do anyone who will have me.
Right.
But I started to figure out which audiences liked both my message as well as my delivery best and who I seemed to connect with the most. And very rapidly, I realized I did not want to speak to youth. I do not want to do the 4-H club again. My God. God bless those people who feel like they can connect with kids and just run with it, because I do not have the patience. I love mine dearly. I don't want to teach yours.
Right.
What it came down to. Yep. So I realized that, you know, kids were not my target. Undergrads were not my target either. They weren't far enough in the lines. They didn't yet understand. They didn't see how the public speaking was critical to their career progression. Where I found the sweet spot of the people who not only got the importance of it, but were also willing to put in the work, because what I do is hard work. It's retraining communication habits. Mm-hmm. That was at that middle management to senior management level. So once I hit that, I was able to focus my talks better, focus my content better, and focus my pricing better. Everything became more focused and driven to that core individual. The great thing about that is that now I don't need to spin my wheels saying, okay, now I have to develop a whole bunch of content for university students. Mm-hmm. And now I have to develop a whole bunch of content for this group of people. I say, nope, I work with professionals. So people who are in knowledge intensive industries, finance, medical, politics, all of that sort of stuff. Engineers, a lot of engineers, a lot of accountants. I can focus on this group of people and specifically the people who are on that leadership track or in leadership positions because they have particular needs mm-hmm. that I am particularly good at addressing. And since I developed that focus, that was also where I saw the business begin to ramp up and ramp up quickly.
That makes sense. You know, it's funny because I feel like that's kind of backwards. Like every business program I've taken, one of the first exercises is who's your ICA? And it's always like people who like don't even have a business yet. And they're asking like, who's your ideal client? And you're like, I don't know. Like I'm still trying to figure out if I'm going to like sell bath soaps or like business coaching, you know? Yeah. It's like, so to like, I think this is the way to do it though. Like, start by serving everybody and then like narrow it down. But then there's like a proof of concept there that like once you nailed who your ICA is, your business took off. So like,
yeah,
you need to know who that person is, but you might not know who it is right away.
You have to experiment with it
yeah.
to a degree. So, you know, it's not that you want to say, okay, I'll do everyone right now, because then you're still right. really scattered and unfocused. You have to try different groups of people and then see where you hit that sweet spot. Mm-hmm. With my topic, because it's, you know, speaking and communication are fundamental human activities. They affect everyone at every stage in life. So it's easy for me to say, I will serve everyone because it's relevant. And there are definitely aspects of what I teach and approaches that I take, that can be translated for youth. Mm-hmm. That is applicable at different stages in life. Mm-hmm. So it was easy to go down that rabbit hole of I will try to appeal to everyone. I think that a lot of people who do life coaching can also fall into that trap very easily. Oh, everyone yeah. needs to know how to have more confidence.
Yeah.
Everyone needs to know how to be more organized. Okay, that's true. But who do you feel that you connect with in the way that you present the message?
Yes. And who is here? Yeah. Who's hearing you in all of that, yeah, chaos.
Yeah.
Yep.
So sure, start with your topic. If you discover what lights you up.
Yes.
And I know that that's a really bog standard response. What lights you up? Is it bath soap? Does right. bath soap really light you up?
Right.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Who else gets lit up about bath soap?
Yes.
There will be people out there.
There are.
Yeah, like public speaking, rhetoric, that lights me up. Communication lights me up. Who else lights me up, and who can I actually tolerate having a conversation about it with?
Right.
Or who else digs into it as intensely as I do? And then I found that match with the clients.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. That's going to make it easier to show up for work every day when you're that lit up about it. And your clients are excited to see you and you're excited to see them. And you're all kind of feeding off each other when it comes to the energy. Like, I mean, that's why we're doing this, right?
Exactly. it really is. So, you know, I've always felt that if you go with your ICA before knowing what lights you up, to me, that's completely back asswards.
Yep.
Like, makes no damn sense. Who do you want to work with? Do they want to work with you? Do you have something that they want? You could say, like, I want to work with celebrities. Great. What have you got for them?
Right. Yeah. They don't care.
Rather than saying, this is what I've got, this is how it's relevant to these people.
Yes.
And that's also incidentally how I approach any kind of public speaking or communication activity. What is it that you have to talk about? How is that relevant to the audience's perspective? In their world, how is it relevant to them? And then you look at it from their angle and you figure out how to bridge the gap. For business people, it's the same thing. This is what I've got to offer. These people kind of need this, but there's a gap that I can fill in order to get them that thing that they need.
Yeah, that's the money right there. This is what I have, and this is how it's relevant to them.
Yeah.
If you take nothing else away from today, like, that's how you make money.
It is. It must be relevant to the audience's needs and concerns, not to yours.
Yep.
You want to be lit up about it. But once you find that thing that you're lit up about, it all becomes about the audience.
Yes.
So if you're trying to sell dog beds and the thing that you care about most in the world is that it is organic, extremely high quality material. Mm-hmm. And the people who are interested in your stuff is saying, okay, that's nice. But is it waterproof and stainproof? And can I put it in the washing machine?
Right.
Then you kind of have to say organic is nice, but this is where their major need is. This is where their major concern is. I'm going to answer that. And then I'm going to trickle in the organic stuff on the back door. I sell them on this idea first. Yes. It's waterproof. Everything is awesome. Yeah. It's amazing. Did you also know it's organic?
Yeah. And here's why
it won't off gas in your house. So yeah, I charge a premium because it's all these things that you want. And then a little bit more.
Right. Here's where
this is how I sell. This is how I train people to sell their ideas.
Yeah.
To become persuasive. It's all about looking at things from the audience's perspective, from the customer's perspective first.
Right. Right.
And then bringing your interests in.
Yeah. Yeah. And that also then sets you apart from the competition. Yeah. All 100 people, we all sell waterproof, stainproof beds, but mine are the only organic ones.
Exactly. Then in that case, you would say, this is what they want. Yeah. There's no gap.
Right.
Where is there a gap? There's a gap somewhere that I can fill it.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. I love it. Well, this has been great. So I'm going to go into a little bit of a, not quite rapid fire, but rapid fire-esque.
Fire away.
What is your biggest failure?
Oh man, I would say I don't see my business as having a major failure at any point. I don't say that because of any sense of ego, but because I've always been very cautious with how I run my business. I would say that my biggest mistake was not having my fee structure set strongly enough, early enough, and not learning how to stand confidently in my fees, leaving myself open to too much negotiation. So instead of just saying, this is how much I cost, and then zipping my mouth shut, saying, this is how much I cost, and this is why, but if we also do this, then we might be able to bring it down. So leaving myself open to negotiation.
Right.
And that was a mistake, not only because for many years I was leaving money on the table by doing that, but because every time I did that, it reinforced a lack of confidence in what it was I was putting for you in my value proposition. When I learned to state my fee and close my mouth, that was also like, my stuff is this good.
Right. Yeah.
You will find it worth every single penny. I don't need to justify it. I don't need to justify it to you, and I don't need to justify it to me. And that is like a confidence stake.
Yeah.
That you wouldn't believe. And it took me years and years and years to develop it. It's only been within the past couple of years that I've been able to embrace it and internalize it and do it. And sometimes I still feel squirmy.
Yeah. Doesn't matter what you feel on the inside. As long as they don't see it, they're like, they see the price is this, mouth is shut. Inside, you're going, oh God, I hope they buy it. I hope they buy it.
Totally.
That's two totally different things. But
I wish I learned how to do that and overcome that knee-jerk reaction of explaining my prices or trying to like really, really drive home the value and offer that negotiation. I wish that I had gotten rid of that reaction like 5 years ago.
Yeah. Interesting. So this is actually, because now I have to go right down this rabbit hole.
Go.
I'm curious. Do you think some of that knee-jerk reaction to justify your price is also driven by being a female?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. We are socially conditioned to justify ourselves.
Yes. That's exactly what I was where I was going. That was what I was wondering.
Yeah. We're socially conditioned to do it. The bar that we have to face is higher than the bar that men have to face. It's not because all men are nasty or awful. It is thousands of years of social conditioning.
Yes.
So getting over that is really, really tricky. We're retraining ourselves and we are in the process of retraining society as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the more we do it, the faster everyone gets retrained. Yeah. But as it is, I find that we need to stand a little more firm, mm-hmm. not get bitchy about it. Keyword.
Yeah.
Something that my clients, oh man, well, Lauren, how do I do this without coming across as a bitch? Okay, let's dive in. So you don't want to be bitchy or nasty about it.
Right.
It's about being calm.
Yes.
And having that collected kind of confidence and assertiveness mm-hmm. when you are establishing your value, when you are standing strong. It's being objective about the value that you're bringing, saying objectively, this is a price that I can command and mm-hmm. it is good.
That's awesome. Nope. I love it. And I 100% agree.
Yeah.
That's one that I've been personally working on, is not justifying things like this is the answer. Mm-hmm. That's all you need to know. And not saying sorry is the other, but that's like a whole nother episode.
Oh, that's a whole other thing. Yeah. And you know, partially it is to how socially women behave among groups of women. As
yes.
well. We yeah. seek points of agreement when we're within groups of women. It's how we build our relationships. And this negotiating and justifying is a way of us seeking out agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, I do think that it goes against the grain of how our neurons fire. But the more we do it, the better we'll get at it too.
Right.
And yep. then it just becomes a thing.
Right.
Yep. You know, we're allowed to wear pants now.
Woo.
I am sure for the first few women who started wearing pants, it was really effing weird.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure it was hard.
We got over it.
One step at a time. Yep, exactly. I love it. Okay. What's your biggest fear?
Oh, my biggest fear is there's that whole imposter syndrome thing, and mm-hmm. they'll find out. Oh my God, that they'll find out that I'm scared too when I get up on stage. That's part of the reason why I say it out loud. Yeah.
Right.
We're scared when we get up on stage. Everyone is. This is a nerve-wracking thing that we're doing. It's scary to put ourselves out there. So the biggest fear ultimately is fear of rejection.
Mm-hmm.
And that at some point I won't be able to put food on the table doing this.
Mm.
This fear is irrational.
Mm-hmm.
My brain, my logical brain knows that this is an irrational fear. My lizard brain is still beaking it because my lizard brain wants to try to keep me safe.
Yeah. It's just trying to keep you alive.
It's trying to keep you alive. Mm-hmm. And we've all got our lizard brain things. We know it's irrational. We know it's stupid. We just keep dealing with it and saying, hey, here's the proof. This is fine. You'll be okay. Here's a little leaf of lettuce. Go and eat it.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Let's move on with the work.
Uh-huh. Yep. All right. What's your biggest success?
I would say at the moment, my biggest success is making that jump to international work.
Oh yeah.
That was a big thing for me. It was a mental border as much as a geographical and geographical border. So once I was able to say, yeah, I am an international speaker, not just here, but overseas as well. That for me was like, oh, yeah, baby.
Yeah, that's super cool. Yeah, my mom ran her own business growing up. Watching her develop a business, and she had a poster on the wall, a US map. Actually, it's still on her wall. And every country she works in, she puts a pin in. And like when she finally started branching outside the United States, and like now is in China and all over Europe, and it's like, whoa, like, whoa. Yeah, that makes you like super legit.
Yeah. And I mean, 15 years ago, this opportunity didn't exist because the technology necessary to do it just wasn't as accessible. Was it there? Yes, absolutely. But the tools weren't as accessible. Yes. So maybe it's not as big a deal. I know that our podcast listeners can't see it, but I'm saying this with gigantic air quotes. So it's not as big a deal, but for me, it's a mental thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's mental success thing. I reach people in a culture that maybe not be wildly different from mine, but slightly different.
Yeah.
So I've reached across these different barriers, and I'm now helping people in a wider and wider geographic area. For me, that is like, whoa, that is the best feeling ever.
That's awesome. I love it. All right. Last question. What is one single piece of advice or bit of information that you had wish you had known sooner?
Figure out your worth. Double that number and stand firm when you deliver it.
Oofta.
Oofta.
I like that. I'm not even going to elaborate. I think we should end it right there.
And you know what? If that worth is a message, maybe it's not a number. Maybe it's a message.
Ooh, yeah.
Deliver it.
Good point.
Stand firm.
Good point. Yes. It doesn't have to be a number.
Whatever it is, whatever that is, you deliver it. You stand firm.
I love it. I love it. All right, Lauren, where can we find you online if we want to learn more about you or like social media stalk you? Where are you?
Absolutely. Please come visit me, laurensergy.com. That's LAURENSERGY. Spelled exactly how it sounds, .com. I do have my less stress speaking bundle. So for those business owners out there who, you know, they might have to give a pitch or a presentation and they're freaking out about it, I have a bundle for you. It's partially understanding where the anxiety is coming from and how to deal with it, but also a really great checklist. So you don't need to wonder if you packed this thing or remembered that thing when you actually get out the door to go to your talk. Go to laurensergy.com/grow, GROW, and you can enter in your name and email address and pick that up there. I'm on YouTube. Just look up Lauren Sergy. You'll find me, and on Twitter as well.
Awesome. Yes, definitely go check out that little package. And that was like special for our audience, right?
Absolutely.
I love it. And I will make sure all of that stuff is linked up in the show notes so it's easy to click and access. And thank you so much for joining us today, Lauren.
Thank you for having me, Casey.
So much good stuff in this call, you guys. So three main takeaways that I really want to touch base on from Lauren. One was when she talked about one of her biggest mistakes was not having a solid fee structure in place and not just owning it. You do not need to justify your price. Know what your price is, state your price, and just wait for the answer. We don't need to be justifying why we charge what we charge. We just need to believe it and tell them the price. So I think that was a super valuable piece of information. A second key takeaway was how Lauren grew her business kind of step by step. And this is what I teach in my coaching, like start with one offering and go from there. She started with one-on-one coaching local to where she lived. She then kind of was like, well, if I can teach one person, I can teach eight people. And she expanded into group coaching. The group coaching has expanded online. Each thing kind of evolves from the step before that. She didn't just dive straight into giant online, see how many people I can book into my course type coaching. She started one-on-one with a couple clients at a time and built from there. And I think sometimes that reminder that it can be slow in the beginning is a great reminder, and it's also a great way to start because it gives us a chance to really refine things. And for Lauren, also refining her audience. She started by serving anybody and everybody that wanted to pay her, but now has niched down to a very specific group of people that she serves, which brings us to
The third great takeaway, I love this. I might have to just get this printed out and put on my wall. The concept that this is what I have and this is how it's relevant. Whatever you do in your business, whether you sell body soap and bath bombs or you sell high ticket coaching, what do you have and why is it relevant to your audience? Like, boom, that's it. That's what you need to know right there. So such a great call, a lot of good information, both for those that are interested in becoming speakers and just for new business owners in general. So appreciate Lauren's time today. Be sure you check out the show notes. She has a special little offer just for the audience of Steady She Grows. All the details for that are linked up in the show notes. So go get that. Follow Lauren on social. Have a great rest of your week. Whatever you're working on, I hope you crush it. And we will see you next week on Steady She Grows. Thanks for joining me this week on Steady She Grows. Make sure you visit the website, bossladycentral.com, for all of your show notes and details. If you like what you're hearing, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever else you're listening to this. And until next week, keep on crushing it.